the center connector appears not to have any connector at all. It's kind of, Mosley did that, but you know, Hygain did it in the TH4. I'm looking at a picture. I got some information in the TH4 Thunderbird, which is also called a 198 something. And on that one, they do that. They put the feed line, you know, right directly to the, you know, under some screws. And they have little straps, you know, to some little straps on there, too. But they do it by, you know, the shield goes to one side and the center connector goes to the other side. They don't show any chokes or traps, you know, or anything like that.
That was what you're supposed to do on that one. You take a piece of coax, you roll up 6 turns of coax, you make a common mode choke, and then you put a couple of eyes, you know, you solder on a couple of terminals, and you hook it right on to that. Does it have clamps on the element for hooking the wire on? Because Hygain, that was one of the things that Hygain did. They put clamps to the element, to the driven element, to attach the coax cable, and it had also a swaged, you know, support for the driven element, the end of the element, the two halves of the element slip into the swaged unit with insulated pieces of plastic insulated. But they use clamps. Does it have clamps onto the element to hook the cable onto? Over.
I think it does. I wasn't able to find that out there in the dark. I was looking for it. All I found was evidence that they're screwing it to the element. In other words, with a clamp or something like that. That's the only proof that I have. I can't be sure because I couldn't find it. But the layout is really close to the TH4, the old high, which they don't make anymore, by the way. Hygain doesn't make a TH4. They may have made 2 versions of it. I think they did. Possibly the heat kit version, and then they went on to make it after that or something a little different. But the heat kit version, which is what I seem to have, they use some kind of plastic to insulate the driven element from the boom. And it appears that they're using screws, you know, or clamps. All the elements are held together, you know, the ends of the elements are held together with little clamps with a screw in them. They're not the old stainless steel things. They're something else, little pieces of metal form that, I guess, when you put the screw through it, they clamp the elements, the split ends of the elements, you know, together.
Yeah, okay, as I say, Wilson did that. I remember that. That's why Wilson had the same idea with the clamps to the element, where you hook the cable onto, and they had in the center, they had this molded, the swaged piece of metal, and very similar to Hygain, and also Swan did the same thing, almost identical. The only difference is, I know it's not Swan, because Swan had an end connector, so that eliminates Swan. So it's either Wilson or Hygain, Barry.
Okay. I couldn't tell you if it's Wilson. I don't know what Wilson looked like. I just don't know. Possible. The only thing I do know is that its overall layout is a dead ringer for the TH4. I mean, they have 10 traps, and they've got this, spaced 10-meter reflector. You know, they're doing, I don't know if Wilson did the same thing, but that would be a little unusual, but certainly following the Hygain layout.
Yeah, okay. Well, yes, it follows it. Wilson and Hygain, for a while, I think they were in cahoots. Maybe the same guy was designing the antenna for both of them. Both used the same idea. That's why I said it was, I'm not sure, but I remember Wilson, I'm almost positive that they had an end connector on their antennas. So I would say most likely it's down to Hygain, Barry.
And to Leo with a thought. Okay, Barry, you know, I was just thinking, you may want to call the ARRL and ask one of two departments or both. The lab, because the lab runs would run, reviews on various products. There may be an old timer there who remembers if they did a review on the Heath kit, and maybe you would have shed some light on the matter. The other one to get in touch with might be somebody in the advertising department for QST at the league who may remember who placed, maybe it would lead you back to the people that placed the ad that could tell you who made that antenna. Just a thought. Back to that N2EO.
Good suggestion, Rich. Barry, anything further? Want to ask or indicate?
Okay, now I'm going to let this one flounder for a while on the dock, and I think tomorrow, being Monday, I'm going to attack it. I will call the league. I am a league member, again, in spite of my absence. I think they'll respect that, and you tell them I'll go to the advertising department. They probably could look back through old ads and probably see this as a Heath Kit ad, and they would know pretty much what I was looking at, That would be a start. Somebody might be able to clue me in on that one. And I do have another comment. I think we should be straightening people out a little bit here, Dick, on these low-band directional antennas. I'm noticing an awful lot of people are getting on the air at night. They got their fancy new four squares up, and Mel's got his, what do you call that thing, loop, And everybody's thinking that they're getting gain or something, and they're going to have a stronger signal. And I've noticed a phenomenon, which I mentioned to Richie a couple of times today. These guys, especially from Europe, they get on and they say, I'm using a Foursquare. And everybody's saying, wow, he's got a great signal. I guess Foursquares must really put out a good signal. I did a little research on the Foursquare, which is probably the better of all these low-band directional things, except for the beverage antenna, which you and I discussed at one time. That one is a little less understood, what I find is the best you could hope for, if everything was done right, is about 3 dB on a four square, probably 2.5, because things never work out perfectly, I also noticed another thing. All these guys with the four squares are running giant kilowatts. And I think that is why they have such great signals. Because you can get 10, 11, 12 dB real quick with a big amplifier, but you're sure not going to get it with an antenna on those frequencies. Over to you, Dick.
I should know. I'm Googling right now four square, and my machine is in some kind of a lockup mode. Give me a quick description. What does the four square look like, Barry?
Okay, there's several versions of it. The most common version would be four verticals in a square. I think they're about 60-something feet apart, pretty sure. So if you cut a line across from, in a diamond from one end to the other, that would be about 95 feet. And that's usually the two antennas that they would use for the directional thing, the one-way direction thing. You have a driven and a reflector or something like that, or a director or whatever. And the two on the side, they phase those in too to give it a little help, But I think when these guys turn these antennas electronically, they're seeing, this great front to back, which the antennas do have. They could have 18, 20 dB front to back, which is great. And they're confusing that with gain. In other words, they're saying, look at this, I turn this thing, I can hear the guy, now I can't hear him. Boy, this antenna's got a lot of gain. What it's got is a wonderful front to back. And I think Mel really is going the right way when it comes to trying to hear somebody on the low band. Having a giant antenna with a good front to back is probably not as good as having a little tiny loop with a fantastic directional pattern where you get rid of all that stuff. So I think Mel actually may be going the right way with this, Dick. Over.
Okay, I found a couple of pictures of Foursquare. Just like you said, it looks like four ground plane antennas. used as a phased array. Now, when you and I put four Yagis together in a lazy H pattern, Barry, if we do it just right with the right spacing and a lossless phasing harness and power divider, we in theory end up with 6 dB more gain than we would have out of one single Yagi. Now, when you build four ground plane antennas and you feed them in a correct manner, where you electronically favoring, let's say, the east or the south or whatever is your favorite direction, what makes me not get close to 6 dB of gain? I have four individual emitters displaced in space, and I'm feeding them with the correct phase angle. I can adjust them for the best gain in some particular direction, or I can also steer some nodes in certain directions with that antenna. So I'm a little curious as to what makes you think that antenna, with four separate emitters, with a power divider, is not capable of nearly 6 dB of gain. Back to you, Barry.
Because these are not directional elements. These are not beams. These are just four verticals. And if you, what you're saying, if you had four verticals in a straight line, I think you could realize 6 dB, but not in this configuration. In this configuration, I think the best you could hope for is 3 dB, because as you're making these into directional antennas, you're only using two. The other two are phased. They're broadside to this thing, and I think they might help you with your front-to-back or side projection, but not with the gain.
W2RIA. W2RIA. Recognized. But before I get back to you, Barry, when you study the section of the book called Antenna, it's by Krauss, and it's now in its third edition, but at least I remember the first edition gave you all kinds of configurations of isotropic antennas. So I can take four individual isotropic antennas, set them up in a linear line, broadside to the direction I want to transmit in, and without a doubt, those four isotropic, non-directional antennas, properly fed, will give you 6 dB of gain and a kind of a sine X over X antenna pattern. If you plot it on rectangular paper, you'd recognize it. If I set the four antennas up in a end-fire array, in other words, they're in a line north to south, and I phase them in such a way that I get all of the signal to the north, in line with the four isotropic antennas. Again, with proper spacing and phasing, you can get nearly six dB of gain as an end fire. That's the Yagi effect. So the fact that the individual elements are not directional antennas doesn't count, as long as the four are all the same for this argument. The fact that they're not in a line, they can be broadside to the direction you desire. They can be end fire to the direction you desire. They can be anything in between. Now the next level is to combine those two. Have some elements end fire and some elements broadside. So now it becomes a volumetric antenna. Again, with proper spacing and proper feeding, the laws of physics that I understand will allow you to get 6 dB of gain. Are they really getting it? That's another whole issue. When they're not violating physics, when you displace four omnidirectional antennas, as far as azimuth patterning is concerned, these things are omnidirectional, four omnidirectional antennas in a three-dimensional arrangement, properly phased, I think you can get 6 dB out of that. And 2MB, K2IWM, the TechNet.
Okay. It has to be understood here that they are not trying to get an omnidirectional pattern out of this thing. They're trying to get a unidirectional pattern out of it. And that may have something to do with the way they're phasing it, and they can't get the 6 dB. I know that they are claiming 3 dB. That's what I've seen in some of the articles. In fact, if you could get some specs on that antenna you're looking at right now, it'll probably tell you that he got about 3 dB of gain out of it. They talk about really good front-to-back ratios and side rejection. They never mention any more than 3 dB of gain out of these things, so I'm a little confused, too.
Okay. Believe it or not, you can tune an array like that for maximum gain in some direction. You can tune it for best front-to-back ratio in some direction. You can tune it for nearly best gain with a specific null in some direction. That thing can give you a directional pattern. It may have some strong side lobes in funny places, but it has all of the resources to give nearly 6 dB of gain, in my opinion. And maybe we should discuss this some more, because it's a darn good subject. Paul, I bet you've got some experience with this. W2RIA, and by the way, I know about the friend you and I have that just passed away while I was away on vacation this week. W2RIA, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW in the TechNet, W2RIA. Somebody who passed away who's a common friend of ours, I'm not quite sure I know who that is. Maybe somebody that worked there before I did, but yeah, maybe we can take that offline. First of all, I hope my signal is okay, but you're talking about one of the things which is one of my pet peeves in terms of gain measurement on HF antennas. Many, many moons ago when I worked in a company that made VHF and UHF antennas, our gain standard was always, and I repeat, always, by definition, gain at the horizon. So if you had an antenna 3 dB gain or 6 dB gain, it was relative to whatever your reference antenna at the horizon by definition. What I see in text after text of HF antennas is, yes, they talk about gain. They evaluate an antenna with a little bump in the pattern when they see it on neck. They totally disregard elevation angle, and they compare gain of antennas that are shooting in different directions. I think there a lot of people are fooling themselves. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. The K2RIW and the TechNet W2RIA.
Very fine, Paul. A little bit of noise in your signal came through very clear. You're absolutely right. In this particular case, if I took one of the four square ground planes and compare that signal on the horizon, then I'd put four of them together in that four square configuration and properly feed them. From that reference of the single antenna versus the four, it is my belief that 6 dB of gain is possible. You may only get 4.5 dB of it for a bunch of reasons, but I think within the laws of physics, you can get 6. As long as you've got something in the vicinity of half wavelength of spacing, let's say more than a quarter wave, but approaching half wavelength of spacing in both the horizontal and vertical directions when I'm looking at the whole antenna top view. So if I displace them east-west and displace them north-west-south, and if all of those spacings are in the vicinity of a half wave, and if I properly feed it, that thing is a phased array. It is a kind of a conformal phased array, meaning they're not all in a horizontal line. They're not all in a horizontal line, or they're not all in a vertical line. But in either case, you can make the signals picked up by the individual antennas add together in a co-phased manner with the right kind of a phasing harness. To see it as a transmitter and talk about its gain is not easy to see. I'm going to give you that one, Barry. Now look at it from a receiving point of view. As long as the spacings are great enough, I think you'll admit that each one of the antennas can pick up an amount of signal as if they were essentially alone and the other three antennas were not there. If you and I can agree on that, if each one can pick up nearly the same amount of antenna, same amount of signal in the reception mode, and then I combine those four signals from those four antennas with proper phasing so that they come out co-phase, in theory, I can get four times the amount of power I would get with any one antenna. That's a 6 dB gain. So it isn't clear. Now, what Paul's talking about is absolutely right. Depending on the phase center the emitting center of an antenna, how far it is above ground. In the real world, where you've got ground reflection, you almost always have a particular elevation angle at which the signal is strongest. Rarely is the signal strongest directly on the horizon. It's some number of degrees above the horizon. And so for a unscrupulous antenna company or a guy writing an article talking about the peak antenna gain, and he's choosing the gain at the peak elevation of gain, that's a little bit deceptive unless he is lucky enough that the guy he's talking to now happens to want that particular elevation angle off the horizon. If, for instance, you're talking to your buddy in Pennsylvania from Long Island, there is a particular angle at which you would like to hit the ionosphere where the guy in Pennsylvania is going to get the maximum signal. And if you're lucky enough to have your antenna, by design or by luck, the right altitude off the ground, so that the direct pattern plus the reflected pattern peaks the beam at that elevation angle, and you launch that beautiful signal into the horizon, and it reflects off the horizon, and comes into that guy's backyard in Pennsylvania, and pegs his S-meter, everything's hunky-dory. But ordinarily, what Paul is saying is that when they talk about the peak gain of some kind of an HF antenna, and they don't specify the elevation at which that gain was measured or predicted, then it can be deceptive and is missing information. So back to you, Barry. I wonder if when you look at it from a receiving point of view, where each individual ground plane of the array of four, when receiving, can pick up nearly the same amount of signal as if the other three antennas were not there. If you and I can accept that concept, then there's nothing stopping me from combining those four signals and getting 6 dB of gain. M2 Moon Bound, K2RIW in the tech net.
KM2RL.
RL recognized. Barry first. Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, it sounds right when you say it. It definitely does. And of course, in this case, what's true for receiving should be true for transmitting. So I'm a little lost why companies like Comtech say that this thing should give you about 3 dB of gain. Why are they saying that?
John, good question. They may not know. Maybe they're being conservative. Maybe there are other variables involved. Maybe the spacing is too close. Maybe the ground plane radials are inadequate. Maybe they're getting some ground loss. Maybe they're getting some loss in the phasing harness. There's a bunch of other factors here. I'm saying when I say that the array is capable of 6 dB of gain within the laws of physics as I understand it, that's just capability. Are you really getting it with the particular setup that the guy is describing? That's another issue. And where are those losses? Is it ground plane losses? Is it phasing harness loss? Is it feed line losses and so on? So there's more going on. Steve, KF2RO, what would you like to add to this?
Okay, I was using a four-squared array on 75 meters with the spacing that K2MB described, which is actually about a quarter wave. And I probably got about 3 dB of gain. I was actually steering them electronically. Actually, I was able to control the amplitude and the phase between the antennas electronically. I was actually trying to null out different areas, but I didn't notice the peak. And it probably was around 3 dB. But then I separated the antennas by about 100 feet each, and I got more gain, but not quite 6 dB. But he did say that it was 60-some-odd feet, and I assume he's probably talking about a 75-meter array, which is what they recommend. That's all I want to input.
Good input, Steve. And now you've added another variable, and you're right. As the individual elements of the array get close together, the effective capture area of each element starts overlapping, very similar to what happens when you and I take our 19-element Yagis on 432, which have a 5.5-foot diameter effective capture area. If you separate the antennas horizontally and vertically by 5.5 feet, in theory you can get close to 6 dB of gain. Make the spacing only 4 feet, and then those circles of effective capture area are overlapping, and you can't possibly be getting full signal strength into each one of them when they're receiving, and you start getting less gain. And so the first question somebody not having done this would ask is, why in the world would you guys move them closer together? And the answer is, it's a compromise between three things. How much real estate you've got on top of the tower to affect all of these horizontal and vertical spacings. Number two, how much gain you'd like to have and how much you're willing to sacrifice it. And number three, how clean would you like the pattern to be? When you use full horizontal and full vertical spacing, so you get maximum gain, you're using up a lot more real estate, a lot more wind load, more subject to failure when Hurricane Gloria comes along, and the antenna pattern looks kind of homely. First side lobe 10 dB down, second side lobe about 15 dB down, lobes all over the place. Move them a little bit closer together, sacrifice a little bit of the available gain, the pattern gets quite a bit cleaner, you use up less real estate, less wind load, so it's a compromise. And so you and I have been down this road, Barry. N2MB, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Yeah, I'm trying to peer at his diagram, and it's really hard to see. It looks like he's got the verticals about 123 feet apart. I'm going to have to get in the car in about 2 seconds. I'll talk to him in the car. Okay, so you think he might be getting more than 3 dB. That's interesting. I think if you put them 123 feet apart, you might get closer to that 6 dB. I was under the impression they were 60-something feet apart. So I'm seeing different diagrams here, which is really getting me confused.
Yeah, with only 60 feet apart, 63 or whatever feet apart, which is more like a quarter wave, let's see. Full wave on that band is around 260 feet. Halfway is 130, yeah, quarter wave. You're starting to get well into the area where the effective areas are overlapping, and so life gets more complicated for two reasons. One, the amount of signal each gets is not quite as loud because they're starting to share the signal by overlapping effective capture areas. Second of all, you start getting more complicated cross-coupling between them. In other words, as you feed signal into one antenna, and you think you're going to feed signal into the second antenna by way of the second transmission line, in reality, through space, there's already quite a bit of signal already on the second antenna. Therefore, the signal you feed into the transmission line has to be significantly different in amplitude and phase to make it all come out right in the bottom line. That's called the cross-coupling effect. That cross-coupling effect is an extremely nasty characteristic, closely spaced phased arrays. I have seen a number of very smart engineers design a radar antenna that consists of a whole array of horizontal pieces of waveguide stacked together real tight, all being fed just right as a broadside array, and they cut slots into those waveguides to make individual emitters, and so the whole antenna may have a 500 or 1,000 slot. It's called a slot, a waveguide fed slot array, and you can come up with a beautiful design for each of those slots that'll work exactly like you want, couple the right amount of signal, the right amount of phase angle, if that individual slot is all by itself. You put those individual slots in the middle of this great big flat plate radar antenna, this great big phased array, and you start including all the cross-coupling between the slots, all hell breaks loose. That design becomes extremely complicated. Until very recently, computer modeling programs that could properly give you the right bottom line of all of those cross-couplings, those kind of computer programs essentially didn't exist. And even if they existed, there were huge errors in the program. Still had to do a lot of post-computer optimization. The guys who actually worked on those antennas, I'm not kidding, did a tuning procedure that they called dent tuning. They were literally going in there with a ball-peen hammer, carefully denting the pieces of waveguide in very strategic locations, just the right amount of dent. And if you over-dent, how do you bring the dent back out again? I don't know. Don't ask me that question. But they spend a few weeks of their lives doing dent tuning in order to make the refinement of the antenna to try to control the cross-coupling between those slots. So closely spaced elements of without a doubt will always have cross-coupling, and the proper engineering of that cross-coupling can be a nightmare if you want full performance. In the case of a radar, my recent definition of a radar, particularly an airborne radar, is it starts out with an extremely good antenna design, with an extremely good radome design, and then you hang some electronics on it that you and I call radar transmitter and radar receiver. If you didn't meet the first two requirements, an extremely good antenna design with an extremely good radome design, if you didn't meet those two prerequisites, you may call it a radar, you may write that name on the front of it, you may sell it to your naive customer as a radar, but most of the time, you do not have a radar with performance that he, the customer, will tolerate. You'd be amazed how many naive companies, groups of engineers, and whatever, have gone down that road, ran into that brick wall, and said to themselves, why is Mother Nature giving me so much trouble? Well, because you ignored some extremely significant factors way back at the beginning of the design. You didn't talk to the people who have been through the war, so to speak, who have been through the minefield, been there and done that, and lived with the problems. It's not obvious when you just crack the books and start designing an antenna. There's a minefield out there in that particular phenomenon. Anybody with any further questions or comments on all this good news, give me a call that is right now, KTRIW in the TechNet.
I got one more question for you, Dick.
Go ahead, Barry. You sound good with that radio. You must already be in the car.
Yeah, right. That sounds better. Okay, you know, I'm looking at two different sets of diagrams. One of them says that the elements are about 60-something feet apart in a square, and the next one said 120-something feet apart in a square. Now, I'm getting the feeling that they're approaching this with two different angles, these guys. I think what the ones that are 60-something feet apart, that puts the cross angle at about 95 feet, you know, when you go across the, you know, from one, you know, the furthest direction between two elements. And they're using that as a director and a driven element or something like that. You know, they're driven elements, but you get the idea. In your opinion, how much gain could they expect from what they're looking at there? Before you put the, you know, the other two in there, you got like a two-element driven beam. That's what you've got. And a two-element beam should give you how much in gain?
Darn close to 3 dB, Barry. And there's some pluses and minuses to that because of cross-coupling phenomena and whatever. Just those two elements, all by themselves, properly fed as an end fire, should give in the vicinity of 3 dB of gain. Even before you add the other two elements, one to the left and one to the right of the end fire lineup. What was I going to say there? Whether the elements are all fed or whether they're fed in a Yagi-like manner almost doesn't matter. If the individual elements end up radiating the right amplitude of signal at the right phase angle of signal, all of that potential gain is there. That's the magic of phased arrays. And there's a zillion kinds of phased array. But that's what you and I are talking about. Thank you, Barry.
Okay, so this sounds like that's where they're getting this 3 dB number from. They're looking at this thing like a two-element phased beam. And that's why they're saying 3 dB. It would be the same thing if you didn't phase them, if you just added another vertical. You had one vertical, had another one which was spaced good and far away. You'd probably get, you know, as long as you didn't have them canceling each other, you would expect 3 dB that way also, right?
Absolutely. Whenever you add a second element anywhere in space with, let's say, quarter wave to half wave of spacing from the first element, that alone gives you approximately 3 dB of gain increase capability. So, say for instance now, I've got these things set up in a diamond arrangement. One of them is at 12 o'clock, one of them is at 3 o'clock, one of them is at 9 o'clock, and one of them is at 3, 9, 12, 6 o'clock. You can see what I'm talking about. If I feed only 6 o'clock and 12 o'clock, o'clock, and I feed them in a co-phase manner, I get a maximum signal east and west. If I feed them with the right differential signal, I get the greatest signal north and south. And I can sometimes favor north over south and favor south over north. And each of those arrangements gives me very close to 3 dB of gain. Now when I add, let's assume that I'm using 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock, and I'm beaming dead north. Those two elements, 3 dB of gain. Now when I add 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, if I just do a small amount of signal to them as a tweaker, I can steer nulls in certain direction in order to get rid of some strong QRM. And maybe very little gain increase in that usage of 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock. However, if I go full bore and use full signal amplitudes on all four antennas, that arrangement is capable of close to 6 dB of gain. N2MB, KQIW in the TechNet.
Okay, so I think we understand now why these guys are saying 3 dB of gain. All this fancy phasing, that's going to give them front-to-back ratio, side rejection, which is a big plus. So these antennas typically would exhibit about 3 dB, maybe a fraction more of gain, right?
If I'm feeding full amplitude to 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock, that alone gives me 3 dB of gain. And if I'm only lightly feeding 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, I don't get much gain increase, but I can use it for steering nulls. But then if I go to full signal strength on all four antennas, my 3 dB of gain starts inching towards 6 dB of gain potential if I've got wide enough spacing. I know it's true with 120 feet of spacing. You're going to get a little bit less than that with 66 feet of spacing because now the individual capture areas are starting to overlap. The cross-coupling is starting to increase real fast. The phasing harness becomes a little bit more complicated to calculate and to engineer. Those are the trade-offs. Thank you, Barry.
Okay, and to have 6 dB of gain, you would probably be left with something like a cloverleaf pattern?
Don, good question. It would definitely be a cloverleaf-like pattern when displayed on polygraph paper if they were all spread out in a line. It'd be a kind of a sine x over x. When you put them into this four square, you said cloverleaf pattern. You got to be careful now. The pure cloverleaf pattern we see in the ARRL antenna book tends to have all four lobes of the cloverleaf same amplitude. Not this array. When you're adjusting this array for 6 dB of gain, one of those four cloverleaves will be a hell of a lot stronger than the other three. And will there only be three others? And I think the answer is it's a little bit more complicated than that. Depending on your spacing, I'll just study this a little bit more, but depending on your spacing, I think you could be getting more than four lobes. There'll be one major lobe, three minor lobes in space, but I think it's going to be a couple of extras, particularly with 120 feet of spacing. Thank you, Barry.
Okay, so it might not be a pure cloverleaf. It might be kind of like, more leaf, but not a very directional pattern. Of course, what they're trying to achieve with these things is unidirection in one direction, and I think that may cost them gain if they do this.
Negatory. You said not a very directional pattern. I'm going to take issue with that. You give me four elements spaced a half wavelength each in this 4H pattern, and you allow me to feed them correctly. Yes, there'll be dominant four lobes with one of them much louder than the other three. That main lobe is going to have something like 60 degrees of beamwidth. To me, that is really a directive pattern. There'll be a deep null between that main lobe up north and the next lobe off to the east. There'll be a deep null at a 45-degree angle. That's directivity. You've got real spacing of elements. You've got what the mathematicians call a moment arm. Moment arm means you've got individual emitting devices. They could be isotropic or Yagi's, doesn't matter. You've got individual emitting devices spaced by some number of wavelengths in either east-west or north-south direction. Therefore, you've got what's called a moment arm. You know, the way you decide how much foot-pounds of torque you get out of that wrench is a function of how long is the arm on the wrench and how many pounds of a force are you applying. Electronically, you've got the exact same equivalent. How many feet separation between the antennas is equivalent of how long is the arm on the wrench, and then the force you put on the wrench is somewhat equivalent to the phase angle of the signals you put into those two antennas. So whenever you've got displaced elements properly fed, you've got a moment arm, you've got all the raw ingredients for a real directivity pattern. Thank you, Barry.
Okay, so this looks like it could actually be a directional antenna, and I hear what you're saying. It would be like a clover leaf, but one clover would be much bigger than the other three. And I guess you would, I don't know, which way would you set this up? Would you have a driven element and three kind of director things, or would you have three reflectors? How would you do this?
Okay, now life's getting a little bit complicated. You've accepted the theory by which a Yagi works, where you've got a driven element, a reflector, and some number of directors. And you want this four square to be, you want to use the Yagi terminology for it. You want to declare one of those elements driven, another element reflector or director. You can't do that. It's not a Yagi. It has some of the same phenomena of a Yagi by which it directs, by which it develops its directivity and develops its gain. It is not a Yagi. Now, you better drop the reflector-director terminology on this antenna. This is an old-fed, four-element phased array. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, I can definitely accept that. I understand what you're saying. That makes true sense. I guess in my mind I'm trying to look at this thing like it was parasitic elements or something, which it is not. All right, so there's really some hope for this antenna. And I am only might modify it in one way. I don't want to keep everybody, you know, on this subject any longer. This is it, but...
Okay, you dropped down a little bit mysteriously there. But I'm assuming you're in the listening mode, Barry. Or I hope somebody didn't press one of the buttons on your mic and flip you off to some other frequency.
Difference in gain, negligible, and difference in front-to-back ratio, just slightly worse. So I might do that because I'm only interested in northeast and southwest. The other two sides, it would be like a broadside array. It would be acceptable. You know, we would have a little gain, but not any front-to-back ratio. When I'm trying to work Russia or something like that, or the South Americans, which are close and always very strong. Anyway, back over to you. And I don't want to beat the subject anymore. I think I'm boring people to death. N2MB.
No, it's a darn good subject. Antennas are our favorite subject on the TechNet. They're the least understood, most required, and therefore discussing it is good stuff. And you're into a definite area of interest to me and to the technically oriented people, and this is called the TechNet. Amateurs in general have made very little use of phased array antennas. Phased array antennas have a lot of capability that amateurs haven't yet used. Two different ways of stating the same thing. If I take the 19-element Yagi you and I are familiar with, Barry, and if you were smart enough, you could make that 19 driven elements, I'm not kidding, 19 driven elements, and if you adjust the amplitudes and phases just right, you'll get at least the amount of gain of the Yagi you and I talk about. Whether whether those elements are driven in a parasitic manner with a real Yagi, or whether they're driven directly with an all-fed phase harness, in theory, you can get at least the same amount of gain. And that's not easy for some people to accept. So what an antenna with directivity is, in the case of parasitic elements of a Yagi, it is a number of tuned elements with the right center frequency for each element and the right location and three-dimensional space for those elements. Put the right tuned elements in the right three-dimensional space, and you and I have a Yagi. Take those exact same elements, put them in the right position in space, and even if they're not properly tuned, they can be a little bit too short, a little bit too long, all the exact same length of the driven element. Every one of them is a half-wave dipole. But I put them in the position of the 19 elements of that Yagi you and I are familiar with. Properly feed those 19 driven elements, and I'll give you the exact same pattern, the exact same gain. So all Mother Nature cares about is, do you have the right number of driven elements? Do each one of those right number of sources of signal? And do each of those sources of signal have the right position in space? And do each one of those sources of signal have the right amplitude and phase? You fulfill all of those criteria, and every time you will have that directivity pattern. So directivity pattern really is the interferometry phenomenon. In other words, in certain directions, the signals from all of those emitters add up. In some other direction, they don't add up as positively. In some other direction, they don't add up as positively. And therefore, in those other directions, you have a null in the pattern. That's where the pattern is coming from. Individual elements in space with the right amount of signal level to them. I'm going to stand by a little bit. I think you guys know what's going on. KQIW is a TechNet. Looks like on each one of our TechNets, we have a periodic intermission. So we sit back and think about what we've been discussing.